Welcome, fans of Mystery Detective Stories. This is part two of the first episode of The Golden Slipper and Other Problems for Violet Strange by Anna Catherine Green. The manner of their first meeting was singular and of great interest to one of them, at least. Miss Strange had come in an automobile and had been shown to her room, but there was nobody to accompany her downstairs afterward. And, finding herself alone in the great hall, she naturally moved toward the library, the door of which stood ajar. She had pushed this door half open before she noticed that the room was already occupied. As a consequence, she was made the unexpected observer of a beautiful picture of youth and love. A young man and a young woman were standing together in the glow of a blazing wood fire. No word was to be heard, but in their faces, eloquent with passion, there shone something so deep and true that the chance intruder hesitated on the threshold, eager to lay this picture away in her mind with the other lovely and tragic memories now fast accumulating there. Then she drew back, and re-advancing with a less noiseless foot, came into the full presence of Captain Holliday, drawn up in all the pride of his military rank beside Alicia, the accomplished daughter of the house, who, if under a shadow, as many whispered, wore that shadow as some women wear a crown. Miss Strange was struck with admiration and turned upon them the brightest facet of her vivacious nature. All the time she was saying to herself, "Does she know why I am here? Or does she look upon me only as an additional guest foisted upon her by a thoughtless parent?" There was nothing in the manner of her cordial but composed young hostess to show, and Miss Strange, with but one thought in mind since she had caught the light of feeling on the two faces confronting her, took the first opportunity that offered of running over the facts given to her by Mr. Driscoll to see if any reconcilement were possible between them and an innocence in which she must henceforth believe. They certainly were of a most damaging nature. Miss Driscoll and four other young ladies of her own station in life had formed themselves, some 2 years before, into a select circle of five, called the Inseparables. They lunched together, rode together, visited together. So close was the bond and their mutual dependence so evident that it came to be the custom to invite the whole five whenever the size of the function warranted it. In fact, it was far from an uncommon occurrence to see them grouped at receptions or following one another down the aisles of churches or through the mazes of the dance at balls or assemblies. And no one demurred at this, for they were all handsome and attractive girls, till it began to be noticed that, coincident with their presence, some article of value was found missing from the dressing room or from tables where wedding gifts were displayed. Nothing was safe where they went, and though in the course of time each article found its way back to its owner in a manner as mysterious as its previous abstraction, the scandal grew, and whether with good reason or bad, finally settled about the person of Miss Driscoll, who was the showiest and most dignified in manner and speech of them all. Nothing was safe where they went, and though in the course of time each article found its way back to its owner in a manner as mysterious as its previous abstraction, the scandal grew, and whether with good reason or bad, finally settled about the person of Miss Driscoll, who was the showiest and most dignified in manner and speech of them all. Some instances had been given by way of further enlightenment. This is one. A theater party was in progress. There were 12 in the party, 5 of whom were the Inseparables. In the course of the last act, another lady, in fact their chaperone, missed her handkerchief, an almost priceless bit of lace. Positive she had brought it with her in the box, she caused a careful search, but without the least success. Recalling certain whispers she had heard, she noted which of the 5 girls were with her in the box. They were Miss Driscoll, Miss Hewson, Miss Yates, and Miss Benedict, Miss West said in the box adjoining. A fortnight later, this handkerchief reappeared, and where? Among the cushions of a yellow satin couch in her own drawing room. The Inseparables had just made their call, and the 3 who sat on the couch were Miss Driscoll, Miss Hewson, and Miss Benedict. The next instance seemed to point still more insistently toward the lady already named. Miss Yates had an expensive present to buy, and the whole 5 Inseparables went in an imposing group to Tiffany's. A tray of rings was set before them. All examined and eagerly fingered the stock out of which Miss Yates presently chose a finely set emerald. She was leading her friends away when the clerk suddenly whispered in her ear, "I miss one of the rings." Dismayed beyond speech, she turned and consulted the faces of her 4 companions who stared back at her with immovable serenity. But one of them was paler than usual, and this lady, it was Miss Driscoll, held her hands in her muff and did not offer to take them out. Miss Yates, whose father had completed a big deal the week before, wheeled round upon the clerk. Charge it at its full value, said she. I buy both the rings. And in 3 weeks, the purloined ring came back to her in a box of violets with no name attached. The third instance was the recent one, and had come to Mr. Driscoll's ears directly from the lady suffering the loss. She was a woman of uncompromising integrity who felt it her duty to make known to this gentleman the following facts. She had just left the studio reception and was standing at the curb waiting for a taxicab to draw up, when a small boy, a street Arab, darted toward her from the other side of the street and, thrusting into her hand something small and hard, cried breathlessly as he slipped away,
"It's yours, madam. You dropped it."
Astonished, for she had not been conscious of any loss, she looked down at her treasure trove and found it to be a small medallion, which she sometimes wore on a chain at her belt. But she had not worn it that day, nor any day for weeks. Then she remembered. She had worn it a month before to a similar reception at the same studio. A number of young girls had stood about her admiring it. She remembered well who they were, the Inseparables, of course. And to please them, she had slipped it from his chain. Then something had happened, something which diverted her attention entirely, and she had gone home without the medallion, had, in fact, forgotten it, only to recall its loss now. Placing it in her bag, she looked hastily about her. A crowd was at her back, nothing to be distinguished there. But in front, on the opposite side of the street, stood a clubhouse, and in one of its windows she perceived a solitary figure looking out. It was that of Miss Driscoll's father. He could imagine her conclusion. In vain he denied all knowledge of the matter. She told him other stories which had come to her ears of thefts as mysterious, followed by restorations as peculiar as this one, finishing with, "It is your daughter, and people are beginning to say so." And Miss Strange, brooding over these instances, would have said the same, but for Miss Driscoll's absolute serenity of demeanor and complete abandonment to love. These seemed incompatible with guilt. These, whatever the appearances, proclaimed innocence. An innocence she was here to prove, if fortune favored, and the really guilty person's madness should again break forth. For madness it would be, and nothing else, for any hand, even the most experienced, to draw attention to itself by repetition of old tricks on an occasion so marked. Yet, because it would take madness, and madness knows no law, she prepared herself for the contingency under a mask of girlish smiles, which made her at once the delight and astonishment of her watchful and uneasy host. The next episode of The Golden Slipper and Other Problems for Violet Strange will be out next Monday. This production, copyrighted 2010, Stefania Lintonbach. www.stephsvoice4u.co.uk.